Before we start, can we just observe the moment of silence for a prayer meeting? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Once again, I observe that there are no ANC members at this meeting. And can I just please make it very clear that if we do not have a quorum, we cannot continue with this hearing, according to the rules and regulations. That is your members that aren't here, Chair.
Thank you very much. It's noted, but we don't need a quorum here.
Yeah? I'm going to contest that.
Yeah, we can.
And I'm going to make it very clear to the other people across the other side that if there's no quorum, then this hearing is invalid.
Thank you very
Please
much.
Please take note of that.
If it's, that's your point, but I don't think we need a quorum for this meeting, for now, for this one, for the this one.
Mr. Chair, can I please check that we immediately get legal advice? Dr. Bondry, if you can just confirm with us, please.
Good morning. Honourable Engelbert, to my knowledge, when we have a hearing, we don't need a quorum. And remember, we took a resolution during our strategic planning session that the chairperson could go ahead just for the sake of ensuring that, you know, the committee deals with petitions, with having hearings on his own, if needs be so, if other members are not available. But I'll ask Mr. Mkhize to just check procedurally as well. But as far as I know, the last time we checked, we didn't require a quorum for a hearing, only for the adoption of minutes and reports and other committees.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mimi, can you just recommit to what you said, that the chairperson can go out on this oversight visit only if, on his own if other members are not available. That was clearly my understanding as well.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Welcome, Honourable Timunye. Thanks. Honourable members, I think before we start, let's introduce ourselves. My name is Dumisani Kwimbi, permanent delegate from the Western Cape, chairperson of this committee, which is petitions and executive undertakings. Thank you very much.
Jay, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Bronwyn Engelbrecht, representing Gauteng.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Morgan Chetty, representing KZN.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is George Mtumunya. I come from Mpumalanga.
Thank you. We can go around.
My name is Gerard Versaghi, and I am from the Special Investigating Unit.
Thank you very much. My name is Andy Mutivi. I'm the head of Special Investigating Unit.
Yes, good morning. I'm Andrew Verter from the Special Investigating Unit.
Good morning. I'm Vernon McLeod. I'm the Director, UIF, Department of Labor in the Eastern Cape.
Good morning, I'm Debo Homer, being the UIF Commissioner. Thank you.
Good morning, I am Ditoro Masato, Acting Director, UIF.
Good morning, Jefferson. I'm Eric Nyagemba, the Parliamentary Liaison Office.
Mr. Chair, I do apologize for interrupting, but we couldn't hear the last two people introducing themselves. If they can just speak into the mic, please. We couldn't hear, Chair. If they can just speak into the mic, please.
My name is Ditoro Makhato, Acting Director, UIF.
Eric Nyakemba, Parliamentary Liaison Officer to the Minister of Labour.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Lisiba Manamela from the National Department of Transport.
Thank you very much, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. Gentlemen, our hearing, our agenda today is straightforward. It's about TRTC. We had hearings about this TRTC before, and we had submissions from the various stakeholders, and we had recommendations also as a committee, adopted resolutions. We refer this to the Department to the Select Committee on Finance, and we, if I'm not mistaken, and Labor and Public Enterprise. And we also resolved that a treasurer must be the part of this. Unfortunately, we didn't get, we gave them only 6 months to come back to the committee. Unfortunately, we didn't get any joy from all the stakeholders that mentioned here. And this TRTC, I think members received the documents. It's clear. It's about the employees of TRTC, who they didn't get their benefits. Talk about UIF, talk about pensions. So now it's back to us. That's why we call you our stakeholders. I can mention that Alexander Forbes, which was one of the administrators of the funds of TRTC, in our first hearing, around July, they submitted and they sent to the committee. They have names of about 430 documents. Yes, about 440 beneficiaries who did not claim, and they submitted claim forms but were still struggling to get the applicants or the people supposed to claim their funds. And we didn't we get a report from Labor but I would like, if Labor is here, just to brief us, to assist us. The only thing that we need here as a committee is a quick assistance from the stakeholder to make sure that those people get their money as much as they, as early as they can, or as much as they can. You welcome, Honorable Gaylor. So this is the agenda. This is the why we're here. We need your assistance to quickly get to the point of our people get their money. Others they pass on, but we need your assistance. I think let me stop here, honourable members. If you want to add, honourable members. Just the cause of this meeting, we need to close this thing by serving our people, by paying our people. The only company who came forward to us is Alexander Forbes. But Alexander Forbes, according to the report, he submitted claim forms that those people must claim their money. Let me stop there. Mr. Gaylor, Honorable Gaylor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry for coming late. We had a problem with our transport. However, I'm happy that some of the companies are here. I just want to give you these documents here. You can decide whether if you want to issue them out. That explains the extent of the problems we have with people's pensions. And we're talking of the poorest people. Some of them die without any money. Their kids don't go to school. But if you read those documents, you'll pick up the extent of the problems that we have. Thank you.
Any other member want to say something?
Chair, I needed to check, man, with your permission. The pension, the funds administrators, why are they not here? The Alexander Forbes themselves, why are they not here?
Sorry, sir, they send an email, I just forget that one, that they cannot be here because of what they say? Unable to attend the prior before the prior commitments, but assured to establish the latest status to any unclaimed benefit towards the end of this week. You send this.
Can I read it?
Okay, they did send an email to me stating that they are unable to attend to prior commitments, but are sure to establish the latest status to any unclaimed benefits towards the end of this week. That was the email that was sent to me.
Yes, Gail?
Is SIU here?
Yes.
Thank you. SIU. Somewhere in 1994, SIU was liquidated, was involved through the office in Mthatha by a gentleman called Leon Echter to collect the assets of TRTC, and also they were involved in liquidating the company, selling the assets. And Transkei Road Transport had quite a lot of assets, buildings all over the former Transkei, buses and everything. Now, one is really concerned that once you liquidate assets, the first thing you do is you pay the workers. What we are really interested is what happened with those monies of those assets. SIU was involved. Derek Leon Echter was involved in that. What really happened with the monies of those assets? Because those workers didn't get a penny from those assets, from the liquidated assets. And I know there were properties, houses, bus depots, and so it's all over the former Transkei. Thank you.
Yes, Honourable Member.
Can we hear from the Department of Labour? With your permission, as to what is it that they've done on this matter up to that as far, and let's take it from there.
Let's start from the SIU, ne?
Yes, sir.
Honorable Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity, for the invitation to be part of this hearing process and to just indicate what SIU role was at the time. So I've got my two colleagues here who have been in the SIU fortunately, even at the time when this matter was investigated. I don't know if it's a coincidence, Honorable Chair, that the Leon shares the same surname with my colleague on the right, but his name is not Leon, he's Hein. Hein Hechter. It may be that it's just a coincidence or it's the same person, but he was leading the investigation, and he'll appraise the committee on what really happened. But Chair, just in brief, the committee will probably be well aware of the mandate of SIU as spelled out in the Special Investigating Unit and the Special Tribunals Act. That legislation specifically mandates SIU, based on the proclamation signed by the President, to investigate certain matters that would be reported around maladministration, corruption, and malpractice. So in this event, we would then have received at the time allegations around maladministration, corruption, or misappropriation relating to the affairs of this entity, Transkei Road Transport Corporation, right? So the process then would be that SIU would have put together a proclamation, requested it to be signed appropriately by the President at the time, which was done. And the investigation then proceeded. So part of what SIU does during its investigations, when we find that there's misappropriation or maladministration that occurred and there's a need for recovery, in this case either the actual assets or the monies that could have been lost, we then recover. And Chair, you'll hear from my colleagues that there was some recovery in this instance. So when we recover the monies or any assets related to a state institution, which in this case is Transkei Road Transport Corporation, when we recover the monies or the assets, we keep the money in a trust account, right? So once the investigation is completed and the report is submitted to the President, and then afterwards, then there would be an interaction between the state institution concerned or in conjunction with the relevant treasury, so that whatever assets or monies have been recovered should be appropriately, you know, taken back to the accounts that are relevant, either the state institution itself or through the direction of any treasury that we could work with. Going through the records, I mean, this matter dates back. The proclamation was issued, I think, around 2003 for SIU to investigate. So Chair, we would like to appraise you in full of what occurred. We have a presentation which we didn't have copies, but we do have a memory stick if it's able to be reflected, so that we can take the committee through exactly the process of what SIU did. Chair, with your permission, while probably our colleague is trying to put up the presentation, I don't know if it would be acceptable that we could sort of proceed. We could proceed with the presentation, and once the technology is on our side and is projected, we can then pick up from there. Chair, with your permission, I'm then going to hand over to my colleague, Mr. Gerard Fisahi, who happened to also have been around during that time of the investigation. I do have the knowledge of the fact, but I would like him to take the committee.
Sorry, let me. Honorable Engelbach.
Mr. Chair, and I apologize for interrupting. I have a suggestion. If we can just get that memory stick and then our secretariat can print it while we can continue, can we do that as well? Because sometimes things take long in Parliament and we're busy with renovations in this part of the building, so I don't even know if our stuff are working.
Thank you, sir. Sorry. Thank you. Honourable Chair, honourable members, thank you very much. It's a short presentation, but it is just a few slides. In this presentation, we'll deal with the proclamation mandating the SIU investigation, the facts shown by the investigation, the outcomes of the investigation, and then litigation regarding termination benefits. I'm not sure whether the information about the extensive court case about this matter has been placed before this committee. I will just touch on that, and we also have a copy of the judgment in the matter that was heard in the High Court in Vishu regarding this exact issue of termination benefits. First of all, on the issue of the proclamation, our head has already indicated just briefly on how the machinery at the SIU works. Mm-hmm. The SIU was then mandated by proclamation R2 of 2003 on the 31st of January 2003 to investigate certain allegations of maladministration and malpractice following the litigation of the Transkei Road Transportation Corporation, or TRTC. That SIU investigation was finalized a long time ago, and we have now been invited just to appraise this committee of what happened.
Just on this introduction, maybe just as a correction of the view expressed by the Honourable Member earlier, SIU was not involved in the liquidation. So we got involved to investigate following the liquidation of the process. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The liquidation, of course, dates back to 1995, and we got our proclamation in 2003, so it was quite some time later. So this Government Gazette 242231 on 31st January 2003, set out the exact scope of the SIU investigation. And just for clarity, I will read to you what it says. It's not very long. It says the SIU had to investigate, and that's the specific mandate, the acquisition of assets belonging to the liquidated TRTC by Umanyano Transport and the department's involvement in the matter. Secondly, the transfer of assets belonging to the liquidated TRTC to Umanyano Transport and the department's involvement in this matter. Thirdly, the registration of motor vehicles belonging to the liquidated TRTC in the name of Umanyano Transport and the department's involvement in this matter. Now, that's all the SIU was mandated to investigate. There was no reference to termination benefits or the like in the mandate, so it was not the focus of an SIU investigation. The facts shown by the investigation sounds a little bit like a story from the Wild West and so forth. There was obviously some serious problems in the area at the time. The SIU found that in the period following the appointment of liquidators and auctioneers to assist with the winding up of the TRTC, there was a period of chaos, intimidation, harassment, and lawlessness. The situation was so volatile that the people appointed as the liquidators and auctioneers, Ernst & Young in particular, were forced to abandon their attempts to liquidate TRTC. They effectively
left the scene without completing the liquidation due to all kinds of threats and petrol bombs and other forms of violence. The assets of TRTC, or some of it, were then vandalized or were misappropriated. Now, an entity formed by former employees of TRTC called Umanyano Transport was very prominent in this process of the misappropriation of the property of TRTC. The SIU found that assets and vehicles belonging to and registered in the name of the TRTC were either stolen and sold or were irregularly registered in the or re-registered in the name of Umanyano Transport. The assets affected included bus depots used by TRTC and buses used by TRTC. The outcomes of the investigation, and this is the area we touched on earlier, the SIU restored control over some fixed property, and in this regard we particularly refer to some of the depots used by the by TRTC, and this was sold by an auctioneer, the ones that were actually owned by TRTC and were recovered, was sold by an auctioneer for 2,669,214 rand, a recovery for the fiscus. The SIU also recovered rental payable to the state to the amount of 450,000 rand. Nine houses belonging to TRTC were recovered, if you can recover fixed property. They were recovered and were ultimately sold for a total of 600,000 rand. The SIU also obtained several eviction orders to evict non-paying tenants from property that belonged to the TRTC. TRTC had previously leased some of its depots in the towns other than Mthatha from various local municipalities. These depots were returned to the municipalities with some improvements, obviously, that were added by TRTC. The TRTC head office was handed over to the Zimbani community with the consent of the local municipality, as a large portion of it actually fell within tribal lands, so it was handed over to them. We were not quite prepared for the question that was asked earlier. We have made some inquiries, and we undertake within a week to provide this committee with a full account of what happened to this money that has been recovered, where it is now, to whom it was overpaid, paid over to, and or whether it still is with the SIU. But we will do that. What we also discovered, and this is not actually part of our investigation, but it was discovered during the process of our investigation, was that the whole issue of compensation due to former employees of TRTCs, and in particular the question of a contractual obligation to assist them in finding future employment, was comprehensively dealt with in a judgment of the High Court of South Africa in the Eastern Cape High Court in Bishu, in case number 203 of 2000, Lungile Elliot Siepo and 508 others versus the Premier of the Eastern Cape. Now, I'm not sure whether this committee has got that judgment or is aware of that litigation. I think it's pivotal to the issues before before this commission. Oh, sorry, this hearing. This piece of litigation, as I say, dealt specifically with the issue of compensation. And the court says...
Can I just preface at this stage? The part of SIU has been summarized to the committee in the manner that we did. So when we prepared for this hearing, I said to my colleagues that although we can say to the committee what our understanding of the judgment is, that would probably be, you know, fine. But I think there would be legal advisors of the committee who would then go into detail of the judgment, if they haven't done that already, that is. And then they can advise the committee appropriately. Although we will, you know, in this slide, we do say what our view of the judgment is, but I think in all fairness, it's really not really our space. to then advise on that one. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. What we do say in our slide, we say it was common cause in the matter before the High Court that the Premier of the Eastern Cape fully complied with undertakings at the liquidation of TRTC to assist with the payment of salaries for a future period, leave pay, accrued bonuses, pension payments, and also the payment of severance packages. It appears from the judgment that at the liquidation of TRTC, the office of the Premier, as would appear to be the case, also happened in the instance of the liquidation of a number of other state corporations, agreed to pay all former employees their salary for a certain number of months, bonuses, pensions to be paid out, as well as severance packages. There was an agreement on that point. And if I'm allowed to, I'll just read from paragraph 3 of the judgment, where the learned judge says, I will later in the judgment refer in more detail to the terms of the agreement. For present purposes, it suffices to say that the agreement made provision for the payment by government to the workers of salaries over a fixed future period, including payment of leave pay, accrued bonus, pension and the like, and also the payment of severance packages calculated in accordance with an agreed formula. These payments were duly made, received and accepted, and there is no dispute between government and the workers in this regard. The dispute relates to clause 3 of the agreement. And that is what the whole judgment then is about. It's about clause 3. In paragraph 4 of the judgment, the learned judge continues. He says, in summary, clause 3 records government's, in inverted commas, commitment to job creation generally in the transport industry for the 1,644 workers, and in particular, and there's a quotation, to assist TRTC employees to secure employment in a new transport arrangement. This clause specifically records that government will put in place mechanisms to address transport needs in the province and thereby creating employment opportunities. So our understanding of that is that benefits, as has been mentioned, were paid in terms of an agreement, and the only dispute that remained was whether there was an obligation, a contractual obligation, on the Premier to create work in the transport environment. The court then, the former TRTC workers' cause of action was based on a breach of contract, in that they claimed that government, or the Premier in this case, who was the defendant in the matter, did not create or did not fulfill his obligation to create work in the transport space. They did not seek specific performance to be employed. They were looking for damages in lieu of the breach of contract. So the court was then left with a question whether the undertaking by the Premier to assist with securing employment was a legal and enforceable obligation, and whether this obligation was actually complied with. That's the second leg of the question. The court then, after long deliberations, and if you don't have it, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we will leave a copy of the judgment with you for you to study. But after applying the facts to the law and after quite an involved deliberation, the court found, ultimately, that there was no common intention that this clause will have a contractual effect. It found that the plaintiffs were compensated for the impact of the liquidation and could not succeed on a contractual basis to claim damages because the Premier didn't find jobs for them. The court found that the new entities in the transport industry, may I just stop there for a moment, TRTC, which was a state corporation, was not replaced by another parastatal, but there were a number of smaller entities in the transport sector that were created, and an opportunity was created then for former workers to take up employment in these areas. So the court found that the new entities in the transport industry created by the Premier was indicative of creating a climate to enable them to find jobs,
and that there was no contractual obligations to create a new parastatal similar to TRTC. And the court then accordingly dismissed the claim by the TRTC workers. The court case was instituted in 2000. Its case number is 203 of 2000. So that was even prior to the SIU proclamation. But the judgment was only delivered, shows you how long this matter took, on the 8th of September 2011. So we are not here to prescribe to this committee what to do with that. We just want to bring to your attention that there was a court case in the High Court about this matter. That was what the court found. And then obviously it is part of the evidential material that this committee has to consider. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair, for that opportunity. I think given the work that the SIU did and the view that, you know, obviously we have around the judgment, I think of importance, Chair, is that SIU did investigate and there were some outcomes, you know. There were some monies and assets that were recovered. And as part of how SIU works, that money would have been put in a trust account and would have been paid out at some point. If not, we'll have to then find out what became of it. And then we can then submit a written, you know, submission to the committee. My colleague has committed to a week. We'll make sure that we do that within a week. Thanks.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much. Honorable Kayla.
Thank you. Thank you, SIU. I'm happy that you've cleared your scope of work. Your scope of work is very clear now, what you were doing there. However, the court case was not all the workers of TRTC. TRTC had about 1.4 million workers, 1,000 workers. So there were two groups there. Secondly, if that judgment says that the workers should be paid their severance packages by the Premier, there was then something wrong, because some of them appealed that judgment. Why do I say so? Why would Alexander Forbes confirm that there is monies of the workers with Alexander Forbes? So there's something wrong with that judgment. Secondly, I think, sorry, Mr. Hechter, but I think there's some errors you've made in the investigations with the assets. It's a human error. In dealing with the workers, I've done a bit of investigation. I went to your office in Umtata for some time, but unfortunately you were not there. With the bank accounts, there's a bank account with FNB. I've given a copy to the committee, which has 18 million in it. There is an account with FNB in Umtata with 18 million. So you all didn't, must have missed that one. But there's an account with about 18 million. The copies with the secretariat of the committee. It's a TRTC bank account. There's an account that's about 18 million, but it's there. I hope they can give you the copy. Because I got a copy from one of the former directors, was a financial director of the former TRTC. So it is quite true that some of the workers were not fully paid. They tried to appeal, but it cost them a lot of money to appeal. But some of them were not fully paid. And the letter from Alexander Forbes confirms that there is still monies of the workers. And some of them, which is not of your making, didn't even get the money from the Premier. So what is then very important is what happened with the money of the assets of the company, which you don't have, unfortunately. Yours was to investigate. And that money that's also in FNB is part of the assets of TRTC. And then we can deal then with the payment of the workers. There's a whole lot of packages they didn't get. And as I said, I was not wrong. Some of them have died in poverty, you know, it affects a whole lot of human life, but you are not to be blamed. Yours was to investigate. So somewhere there is a problem. For instance, I do not believe sitting here that in an area like Umtata, which you again not involved, you can sell 9 houses for 600,000. Not in Umtata. I'm from there, and you would agree with me. I do not believe that. I do not believe you can get 2.6 million for depots in those areas. I do not believe so. It then means there needs to be an investigation. What happened with those money? How were these assets sold so cheap in those areas? So, Chairperson, there's quite a lot. But if you read here, the copy that I gave you, there's a lot of pension monies that are sitting with Alexander Forbes. That's in the open in the media. So you are not to be blamed, Mr. Yachter, but you missed the one of the FNB bank account, and I hope that the I brought that copy and I gave it to the office. Brought that copy. There is monies within FNB, and nobody can do anything about those monies because that company is liquidated. So I think there needs to be. I don't know, you can come up with what can be done about that, but the workers are not fully paid. That's the bottom line. And because of poverty, they could not appeal, because you should know as very well, it is very expensive to appeal with lawyers. But they got a raw deal out of that whole thing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Pugela. Honorable Tumunye, and we'll follow up on Wana.
Thank you, Cheche. You will pardon me, I'm new in this committee, and therefore I'm not conversant with the background on this matter, but reading the documents that were given to us as members of this committee, I look at the prayer of the petitioners, and I look at the... I also look at the people who appeared before the committee and made submission, and I noticed that Alexander Forbes, in all fairness, did not appear before this committee. At an event where they appeared, it was through a teleconference. That's my reading of the opinion. And Alexander Forbes are still not here today. But on the recommendations of the hearing, is that it says Treasury is to spearhead an urgent investigation into the issues raised in the petition. This investigation is to include all the affected stakeholders, the Department of Labor, the Department of Transport, and the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, and the implicated financial institutions, which is First National Bank, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and Alexander Forbes. The investigation is to further entail inter alia an audit into the number of employees TRTC had prior to the liquidation, the number of TRTC employees which received benefits post liquidation, and so on and so on and so on. But then, Chair, I'm sitting here. I'm trying to understand and to follow the progress on this meeting. Whether the meeting is assisting us really to solve this problem, which has been dragging for so many years, I fail to get that kind of a conclusion or that kind of a to arrive at that kind of a conclusion that says this meeting will assist us. To arrive at a conclusion and resolve this matter once and for all. And I note with really serious concern that Treasury is not here as well, because they were supposed to spearhead it. And for me, from where I'm sitting, this matter calls for a forensic investigation, because you needed to do a forensic investigation to determine who did what, and also to look at that judgment that was delivered, was just read into the record now, as to what it contains. And in the aftermath of the forensic investigation, my view, a layperson's views, of course, is that when evidence are gathered, then we needed to go back to court for the court again to make another determination, as a court order again, as to what then becomes an obligations in law of the Eastern Cape Provincial Government, because their successor entitled to this organization. So they carry all the problems that this organization would have left for the Provincial Government of the Eastern Cape. And as far as Alexander Forbes, I'm not understanding why are they not appearing, and why, in my view, if they've not paid out some of the pensions of the workers and why they did not pay those pensions out after such a long time. And they are beating around the bush is a cause for concern for me. It tells me they have something to hide. I will come back later, Chair. Let me listen to other members.
Honorable Wanna.
Good morning to everybody. Thank you very much, President. Although maybe other presenters have presented, but I've got a few questions. First and foremost, can I be cleared how many depots were under charges? Secondly, charges had two categories. There was a freight services, but the presentation maybe did cover that, but I need a clarity. There were trucks, there were trailers. They were all the depots were having their own vehicles. And the make that were made that time were dealing with MANs. How many MANs were dealing with Mercedes-Benz 1624s in terms of the capacity of the engines? Were dealing with breakdown trucks in terms of freight services? Secondly, how many months that were paid to the workers of TRTC then? After the liquidation? What was the situation, the depots which were out of Transkei that were operating like long distance operations? I want to say to the SIO, can they give me clarity as SIO? If they did make investigations, there were no situations where there should be a person made accountable. How many banks, because there were different banks in TRTC, there are banks which were used by long-distance operations. There were bank accounts which were used by local operations. There were banks which were used by freight services. There were another element of Transkei engineers in Norwood where they were refurbishing the engines and the gearboxes and the prop shafts of the whole institution. So I want, if those things have been explained, I appeal for a humanity that they must give the explanation.
Thank you very much. Do you want to respond, SIU, in this?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very important that there's another key stakeholder that should also be here. We've already heard about a number of people who are not here and who are in the best position to answer some of the questions posed by the Honourable Member. And that is Ernst & Young, who were the actual liquidators. So the question of money in a bank account, that is, and assets immediately after the liquidation, the liquidators would be the ones that would be in a position to say something about that. From the SIU side, we got our proclamation in 2003. That's almost 8 years after the liquidation. We can only talk about what we found that was still left by the time we got there. We know that a lot of vehicles were stripped and finished and were shells. we have an inventory here that we can also make available to you of vehicles that were still left at TRTC when we became involved with our investigation. And it's quite amazing to look at the value of some of these of these vehicles in particular. It's virtually nothing because it's 200 rand and things like that, because they were scrapped, they were stripped, and they were finished and so forth. So I think if the question is what happened to recovery vehicles and freight services and other huge trucks and etc. that was in use there, I think that's a question that should be posed to the liquidators, Ernst & Young, who were at least on the scene for some time. We know that Mr. Stuart Waymark was directly involved. He's now retired, but I believe he's still in the country. And there was a liquidator, Mr. Hoff, auctioneer. Sorry, Mr. Hoff, who I believe is no longer in South Africa. But so I don't know of what service he can be. As far as the depots are concerned, I'm advised by Hein Hechter, who was the manager of the actual project on the ground, that a significant number of the depots were actually leased from municipalities, so they didn't actually belong to TRTC. And I'm just trying to find the names of the towns that. Okay, so depots in Aduchwa, Mount Frere, Kumbu, Tabankulu, and Bizana were not owned by the TRTC, but they were leased from the municipality and they were handed back. The one depot that was actually sold off if I understand correctly, through an auction, was the depot in Mtata itself. So that's the one that was referred to amongst the recoveries. So I'm sorry that we are not in a position to account for all the assets and what happened to it, or even amounts that were left in the bank account at the time of the liquidation, because that would be information that would peculiarly fall within the knowledge of the liquidators themselves. We only got involved 7.5 years later.
Follow up, Mr. Gehler, then we can. After that,
the depots were under PTO, permit to occupy, the permit to occupy. So it is not true they belong to municipalities. In other words, then, I also have a property that's under PTO. I then can sell the top structure of the property. That's not a PTO. You can sell the top structure. So those depots are supposed to be sold. Top structure. They're under PTO. They're not under municipality. They're under PTO. I know those areas. I'm from the... Luckily, I know those areas. I'm born and bred here. But what I would say, Chairperson, I'd like to align myself with my colleague here. I just spoke to that gentleman from SIU. Is that... I spoke to him, and unfortunately he's not here, and I was going to another meeting, is that we reopen this investigation, because the mere fact that there is money in a bank tells you this was not thoroughly done. There is some mistake you made somewhere there, And we also investigate those properties, how were they sold. Because I say you cannot in Mtata then sell 9 houses for 600,000. You can't. It's impossible. You can ask anybody in Mtata. I know some of the houses that were sold there. Mm-hmm. And my information tells me they were sold for more money than what is presented here. Mm-hmm. That's my information. As I say, I'm a boy from there. I know all the corners there. That's my information. I'm not... You were just investigating... But the culprits are the liquidators. You might have made a small error on some of the bank accounts. And also your investigation, Chairperson, through you, if you agree, also the monies that are with Alexander Forbes of the workers, and also monies that are with Old Mutual of the workers. Yes, if we can delve into that, but Chairperson, yes, I think if we can do that, but we as a committee continue with our usual, with what we agreed on to do, continue with it. But at the end of the day is that the workers must be paid, and believe you me, there's no money they got from the Premier's office. There's nothing they got from the Premier's office. That's the truth of the matter. They didn't get any money from the Premier's office, according to them. They got their own lawyer who was dealing with it. So I think that I align myself with this proposal.
Okay, fair. Yes.
Just one question for me, for SIU. Then I beg for your permission again to continue to check with Labour if they have anything to say. All the other players that are here, stakeholders that are here, if they have anything to say on this matter. I think to some extent I'm very satisfied with the role of SIU based on the proclamation that was done for them. To investigate this particular case, but the judgment that you made reference to, was it a judgment based on the case that you've been investigating, or is another judgment separate? I did not get you there. Was it your case that went to court and you obtained that judgment?
Sorry, Chair, should I answer now, because I still see some answer on the honourable members. Just on this last point, the judgment is not directly linked to our investigation, because it's not in the litigation in which the SIU was a party. The parties to this case in the High Court in Vishu was Lungile Elliot Siepu and 508 others. They are all former workers of the TRTC. And the claim was against the Premier of the Eastern Cape. So it is, and they specifically sued for the issues that I mentioned earlier. I hear the Honourable Member saying that these people did not receive a cent. This judgment says, and I can't speak for it, I just read what the judgment says. The judgment says that was not even an issue before court, that it was common cause that they received certain benefits, but I can't vouch for that. That is just what the judgment says. As far as the Alex Forbes story is concerned, it must be understood that, and it's certainly my understanding, again, I'm not a member of this committee, my understanding of what Mr. Munton of Alexander Forbes says, he says that the members of TRTC belong to a provident fund, which I would imagine was with Old Mutual and was administered by Alexander Forbes, and that they paid out the benefits of the members, but a certain number of members have not yet claimed their benefits, and those are the ones that are being held because they have not received claims from these people, either because these people don't know that they're entitled to benefits, or they are deceased, or for some reason or other have not actually come forward to claim their benefits. So it wasn't a question of it being withheld. It is not. By that is just my understanding of it. I'll pause there.
Thank you, Chair. The Department of Labour, if they've got anything to say, I'm very much interested to hear what they did, what was their role on this particular matter, because it's, from where I'm sitting, it's also a labor matter, and being a national department that is custodian of labor matters in the country, in one way or the other, you should have been involved. And if you were involved, how were you involved?
Thank you, Honourable Member. Can I just give the members first, then I will respond. Honourable One, I want to say something, and then.
Chairperson, I want to echo the words of the two members that this meeting is not going to take us anywhere. If you remember, Chairperson, when we were in Umtata, Alexander Forbes made an understanding saying that they've got the workers' money and they are going to pay even the interest. We're talking on a meeting situation. That's one. Two, the issue of properties in the Eastern Cape, more especially road transport, has been fraudulent by the authorities who were given the task of doing that investigation, be a liquidator or what. If you listen now, there are people who are no more here in South Africa who were part of that program. I want to say, Chairperson, there are many depots who were in 1995, 15th of August, were intact. The stop structures. They were more than what I'm going to tell you. Qala has got its own infrastructure. Lady Frey of Mvapa, Butterworth, Ngobo, Aidunjwa, Mzimkulu, Mbezana, Tabangulu. I can list them and the freight services. But this report doesn't include freight. And freight services was having abnormal trucks and they were new. According to the budgetary planning of the RTC. And this report doesn't give us any information about the long distance operations. Secondly, Chairperson, we need to have a separate investigation in terms of maybe the financial service board must be included in this. If you cut about the accounts, there's a lot of money. And even in the legislature, if you go there, there was a money which was allocated for charities, although it was liquidated. And secondly, I wish the Department of Labor can give us a report, because this is exploitation of the highest order, exploitation of workers. And there was no term of reference. That was, what was the issue of the SIU, that there's no person was found to be accountable for the whole saga. Chairperson, as a committee, after this, we need to sit as a committee and come up with a proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Engelbach.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and I want to thank the SIU for, I think, a comprehensive report back. And what I would just like to check from you is, were you able to pick up on any irregularities that we as a committee should maybe aware of? Or in your opinion, was your findings based on an accurate observation and there is nothing that we as a committee need to be aware of or concerned of? Thank you.
Can you... Oh, yes, Minister, Honorable Kayla.
Yeah, no. I'm just on the judgment. I've got a copy of the judgment. I've seen the judgment, and I think some of my colleagues have the judgment. Judgment depends on who represents you. That everybody knows. If you got the money to pay for the lawyers, that's how judgment depends, how good your lawyer is. And I'm not making a mistake that you're talking about 500 from 1,400 workers of TRTC. There were two groups there. Not making a mistake on that one. In fact, you can get a copy of the workers from the workers' lawyers. They are in Umtata. They'll give you that copy. They'll confirm what I have said. So there are some mistakes made. Another thing, Alexander Forbes. Why should Alexander Forbes keep workers' money for all these years? It's over 30 years. Now, the article that I've given you, Chairperson, is very clear. It says Alexander Forbes is in possession of workers' money since the 80s of over 300 million. Why keep those monies of the workers? It's the article in the paper. Why keep those monies of the workers while people are dying in poverty? That's a question that you need to ask yourself. What are they being kept for while people are dying in poverty? Why should their monies be kept? Who are they kept? Who is to benefit on those monies? So there needs to be a thorough investigation. Why are poor people's monies kept? Because mostly it's poor people, people who are illiterate, who cannot go to a lawyer, who don't know anything. And fortunately, we are representing those people here. As we're sitting here, we're representing those people there. Because those people cannot talk, so they talk to us. We know how they suffer. So those are the questions that we, even labor, needs to dwell in. Why are workers' monies kept while they die in poverty? Basically, as said before, that these workers would have liked to appeal the judgment, but because of finances, they couldn't appeal the judgment. They were not happy about the judgment. And also with that judgment, Chairperson, for your information, that was a political judgment. The guy who represented the workers was the certain Mr. Delport. You know who I'm talking about. So there were a lot of politics played at the expense of the workers. Not by the judge, but by the people representing the workers. So there are a lot of things to play here. So let us rather think positive. Let us not look at the negative. How do we solve this thing together, SIU, everybody? We need to solve this problem. There are monies of people there. People who cannot talk for themselves. People, citizens of this country that we call our country, South Africa, black or white. So let's think about those people. SIU is representing people. You are representing people. Employed through the taxes of the people as well as we are employed through the taxes of the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Man. I think let's give Labour to say something to this comment. Over to you, Labour.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just introduce Umali Tol. He's a man in the office of the DG. He also has joined us. Yes. He was not here earlier. I think, Chair, just to give a bit of background on how unemployment insurance fund functions, because that's the issue that has referred to Labour to investigate and consider. Now, the key element with respect to unemployment insurance fund is, first, we need the company to register. And secondly, the company must declare their employees on a monthly basis. And the company must collect contributions from both the company and the employees and pay that to the UIF. And once that is done, upon the need arising for UIF to process claims, then claimants will come to UIF and process claims as per defined rules. And one of those rules is people need to apply within 6 months of facing whatever situation that they are facing at the time, whether it's unemployment, maternity, or death, whatever condition that people face, they need to apply within 6 months. But I think, Chair, maybe just to lift up one area, we did a check of the 62 employees, because we wanted to make sure that are they in our records, is the company registered, was the company contributing. Our records reflect that the company was not registered with UIF. It was not declaring employees and it was not contributing. And now that being the case, it means as far as UIF is concerned, we don't have funds that speaks to the workers in question here. There was no money contributed to UIF for the workers in question. And therefore, UIF is unable to process, if any, claims for the workers in question, because they are not meeting the rules. Because the mandate we have is for workers, as you correctly said earlier. And when a worker comes and claims, we process the claims because it's the money that we've been saving for them. And we've checked the list. We went through all the list of the 62 claimants, just working through the system one by one, just to check if by chance, maybe one of them may have claimed and we may have processed a claim with TRTC, and none of the claims were processed with TRTC. Claims that were processed were for companies that the workers worked for after TRTC. And I think that's our submission at this stage. And maybe just to touch on the CCMA myth around, where is that piece? Disputes. Processes within the department are triggered by the people concerned. That if, for example, workers have an issue that they want to raise, it triggers the process to CCMA. And CCMA has to process that matter within 30 days. But it doesn't work the other way around, where CCMA has to go to the people concerned, unless advised otherwise by different stakeholders. Because that could also easily constitute interference. I think it's that balancing act, Chair, that I want to highlight, is within the mandate of the department. And Provident Fund and pensions are not within the scope of the department also. Maybe I should just highlight it. It was also highlighted by Mr. Gama when he came here previously. I think I'd like to pause at that, Chair, for now, and maybe entertain questions.
Yes, SIU would want to say something before we...
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just a few comments. I'm going to start just with a question regarding consequences or consequence management, etc. It is my understanding that there were several criminal cases opened, again, considering, Honourable Chair, that we became involved, say, 7.5 years after the liquidation. There were several criminal cases opened, and whenever people were to be arrested or whatever, there was more unrest and problems in the area and the criminal cases. None of them ever went further. There was no disciplinary action taken, as far as I'm aware, against any official. So, as far as consequence management is concerned, it looks as though very little happened. I think it's very important in the light of comments by several of the honourable members, honourable chair, is that it must be remembered that the SIU is a creature of statute. It can only operate within the four corners of its empowering act. It gets its mandate from the president, reports to the president, and can only do what the president tells it to do. So I read the mandate in this matter earlier. It relates only to acquisition of assets of TRTC by Umanyano Transport. The transfer of assets from the liquidated TRTC to Umanyano. The registration of motor vehicles of TRTC in the name of Umanyano. So it only related to that very limited area. We could not look at freight and other areas that was not linked to Umanyano, because my understanding is that in the other towns outside of Umtata and the smaller centers, there were other entities that were created in the transport space that took over transportation functions. I have a mandate from our head to offer to this committee that should there be specific issues that they want us to look again at the future, that you could perhaps put that in writing. We will have to approach the president for a mandate to do that, because this matter is closed out, etc. We need to get that again from the authority to do so. But we express our willingness to support this committee to deal with any follow-up issues or do our best to relook at issues, even taking into account the difficulty of this happening more than 20 years ago. But we want to assist the committee, and therefore we offer that kind of service. Maybe slightly tongue-in-the-cheek if we say the quality of your legal service is important in the outcome of the case. I must mention that the attorney acting for the ex-TRTC workers in this matter, Dr. Tassius Delport, whom you might know as a former politician as well, was my professor at university. So I think I certainly don't think he's an incompetent lawyer, but that's just tongue in the cheek. That's And as far as Alexander Forbes is concerned, again, I want to say, and I've heard various members of the committee, honourable members, saying that Alexander Forbes must come and answer certain questions. So the questions regarding Alexander Forbes, we can't talk on their behalf, and I suggest the committee raise some of these issues directly with them. Thank you, honourable chair.
Thank you, honourable member. I'll give you the last chance, ma'am, but I want to release the officials because I want a way forward on this thing, and leave, and the committee must sit now. We'll give them 5 minutes break and come back, and the committee must sit now and take a decision. We cannot delay anymore this case. I don't know. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm just waiting for a reply to my question, whether there were any specific incidences that you picked up that we should be aware of. I didn't get a reply to that question. Irregularities that you picked up that we should be aware of.
Honourable Chair and Committee, I wouldn't say as such irregularities, but I think if the liquidator, Mr. Young, could be here to inform the committee about the surroundings of actually what happened early after 95 about the intimidation of the auctioneers, of the liquidators, and pointing of firearms and all of that, and the theft of these assets, he would be an integral part to give his evidence here, that I think that the committee can understand of what happened at TRTC, and especially the groups that were formed by the workers themselves. I'm talking about Umanyano, Masibambane, there were other groups as well, and that we should also have the department officials, I don't know if they have appeared here, of Transport Provincial, that they could also explain of what actually happened in those early years of the liquidation. And I think those are the people that can shed light on what happened to those assets, because if you look at the valuation of these assets, 200 rand of a chassis, we heard evidence here of trucks. Yes, there were trucks, but when we arrived there, it was merely a shell. Everything was stolen out. So I suggest that Ernest and Young be brought back here to give their evidence here before this comes.
Thank you very much. Honourable one.
Let me appreciate all the explanation. But what I can say, I will request the information about the assets register. Second, Chairperson, it will be proper, your proposal, because there were many assets. For instance, in that institution, I've got a question. If whatever reasons that makes the liquidation, why did they specify to passenger services? Why then freight services was also closed if this thing was done as I'm listening to the explanation? Where are the operations of freight services if this thing was concentrated in the passenger operations? And what was, Chairperson, I don't want to delay this meeting, but there's a lot of explanation to explain to these honorable members on the other side. There's a lot.
Honorable one, thank you very much, Mrs. I know, Ababu Kayla, thank you very much. I think let's have a way forward now as a committee. As far as we get all we want, then let's discuss as a committee what is the way forward, because I'm afraid that we cannot finish this thing, and we need to finish this before the security meeting, which is coming up at 10:30. Yes.
To get the name of the second auditor, the one that you say is out of the country, who was it? No.
Sorry.
And the second one?
It is Ernest & Young, Stuart Waymark. I did speak to him. He's retired. He is in Cape Town. And he did, just to just a bit of short notice that I said that could he make himself available, but he did indicate that he would make himself available to any inquiry. And Mr. Hoft, that was the original appraiser, he, I understand, has left the country. Then the other auctioneers were Ian Wiles auctioneers. Those are the other, and they are also available still, and they are also willing to appear, if need be.
I know that also there is also Department of Transport here. Mm-hmm. I'll ask Department of Transport to make a submission in writing. For the committee, I would like to, we don't want those delay all those things, because this is an old, old case. And people, as you said, Mr. Honorable Gayla, are dying. So we need to take a resolution. Sorry, Department of Transport, can you do submission in writing to us? Thank you. Honorable members, I'll give you only 5 minutes for the officials that are going out, and we come and take a resolution as a committee.
Hello, Mama, how are you? He doesn't do well with this
ceremony.
Must pull it out. Yeah.
Hello, baby.
Members, order. Order.
No.
Who's sitting here? Nobody.
No. Okay. There's nothing that we need to hide. Because we need to record everything that we are doing now as a committee. That's why our officials must be here and record. Because we need to take a resolution and the way forward. No. We can take it to the media, the thing. Because we need this thing. Public meeting, yes. Please. Yeah. It's open, please.
Mr. Chi, I want to lodge a very serious objection. Can I just speak on my own? Thank you. I just really want to lodge a very serious objection. Because when you have a hearing, I was concerned that we don't have a quorum and you allowed the hearing to continue. But now we have to make a resolution on the hearing when the members were not present in the hearing from the beginning. And I saw that because the questions that came out while the SIU was here were questions that had already been covered by the SIU before the members came in. So what is happening? We are embarrassing ourselves. So I have a problem when we have to take a resolution and all the members of the committee were not present when the hearing took place. And that is why I objected to that hearing with us not having a quorum. So, Chair, it's something that I feel very, very strongly about and something that I would like to have legal advice on. How can we make a resolution with members of the committee when they were not present with a hearing from the beginning when all the information was provided?
Thank you very much. And ma'am, I think we need to understand. We are in a meeting. The meeting is still on. And we didn't break. What we said the stakeholders can go out and the committee to carry on and take resolution. I don't understand you now. Thank you. Can we move forward, guys? Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, we had a hearing, we had the submission. Actually, this case is not a new case. Submission was done before. But here, we are here to seek a final, because we ask SIU, we ask the treasurer, but they come back to us without any solution. Now, this case, what we need a way forward, what I can say so. What is this committee seek to about? But there were suggestions from, for instance, from Honorable Mtimunye and supported by Honorable Gaila that the way forward here, we need to get an investigation, another investigator, to investigate this case. But also, one put it in front of the committee that Alexander Forbes didn't say there is no money for the workers. What do we say about that? But there is money in Alexander Forbes, which is ready, according to them. But the reform form, they didn't come yet. But according to it, then what do we say about that as a committee? What do we say about the other investigators to take this thing forward? Thank you very much. Honorable Josh, and followed by Honorable Engelberg and Honorable Gaila.
Thank you, Chairperson. A few weeks ago during our strategic planning, there was a resolution taken by this committee that we will be dealing with petitions that fall within our jurisdiction, and that we will be referring, for the sake of the petitioners, those petitions that strictly don't fall within our jurisdiction, to the correct places, because it is in the best interest of those petitioners. Now, I understand that we have already embarked, before we made that resolution, on this petition. I would strongly advise that just because we previously already embarked on this petition does not make for it to all of a sudden now fall within our jurisdiction. It still falls outside of it. We just saw the light and woke up in the meantime, with all due respect. So my suggestion or my proposal would be that since this petition does not fall within our jurisdiction, that we should refer it, and that should be our resolution, we should refer it to a body that is actually best equipped to provide some relief to the petitioners and not to waste their time any further. That would be a resolution that is in line with our decision at the beginning of the year, and it would be the resolution that is in the best interest of the petitioners. We can't make decisions that fall outside of our jurisdiction. That we are in agreement on, and we agreed upon it at the beginning of the year. So my suggestion would be that we bring this petition in line with the decision that we made at the beginning of the year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. And in supporting my colleague, I'd like to refer back to what the SIU presented to us this morning, was that there was a court case in the Eastern Cape High Court in Bishu, in which it was found, and it was common cause, that the Premier fully, and I'm reading, fully complied with the undertakings at the liquidation of the TRTC to assist with payment of salaries over a future period, leave pay, accrued bonuses, pension payments, and also the payment of severance packages. So this has been dealt with comprehensively, legally, by the people that have the jurisdiction to do that. So I agree with my colleague. We cannot get involved in something where there is already prima facie evidence, where it's already been decisions have been made, and we need to refer back to this court case, and that this is the decision that was made, and I think we as a committee need to stick to that. Thank you.
Honorable Keller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I beg to differ with my colleagues.
First of all, when this petition came here, we were aware that there is a court case. There was a court case. We're fully aware of that. We took on this petition knowing there was a court case. I think a copy of the court case was given to this committee at that time then. Secondly, what we agreed on while we were busy finalizing this petition. Therefore, we cannot leave work that we've been doing. This was work in progress when we took that agreement. Therefore, we cannot leave this petition out. We have to finalize it. We're at the final stages of this petition. That's where we are right now, at the final stages of this petition. And we took this petition knowing very well it affects people down there. We took it knowing very well that it, and when we were engaging with SIU, which they didn't deny, is that a section of those workers went to, the majority didn't go to court. That was a section of those workers. The majority didn't go to court. And the resolution of that court case were not implemented. SIU agrees with us on that one. That were not implemented. So then we need to find a way forward. What I then would suggest is, as my colleague said here, we have a forensic investigation. You know, whether SIU ever, because there are some monies that are not accounted for, which should have been accounted for when this company was liquidated. There are those monies that are lying there. They are not accounted for. So we ask SIU to reopen the case so that those monies can be accounted for. Secondly, we have our legal team within Parliament to look at that court case, because there seems to be flaws in that court case, and that to our legal department. Lastly, if you read this newspaper clipping, unfortunately some of you don't live with these poor people. If you look at that newspaper clipping I gave you, it says there's monies of workers that are lying with Alexander Forbes. And the question, if you represent people, the question you'll ask yourself, why are people's monies being kept for over 30 years? So we need then, either we ask what is FI's financial investigation to investigate those monies. Why are the monies not by the people? Why are those monies being kept? Financial intelligence. So those are my proposals. But we cannot leave this. This affects poor people. It affects people who have nothing. And we are here representing people. I am representing people that have nothing. We are here representing those people. They came to us asking for help, and we haven't finalized this. We must finalize this petition. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable One. Not yet, sir.
Chairperson, I'm sure even yourself, Jefferson, there is an information in front of us saying that there was an amount which was invested, plus minus 16 million or 61 million. A treasury reply some time back. And secondly, I want to appeal to other members. In the rural areas where we are coming from, the people that doesn't know the state bans and whatever, they will come to our constituencies and asking for assistance because they've got no money to go to court. So, in the OR Tambo, the population there is 1.6 million, statistically verified. So, the workers who were at TRTC were 1,600. The report that is always presented to us is about 500 workers. Maybe those workers were middle management going up. The lower people were doing something like cleaning, mechanics, all those categorically types of workers are not included in that judgment of 500 people. So I want to say let's make things faster in terms of saying Alexander Forbes must come to this committee, even if it's a one institution. Financial Intelligence Committee must also invite them to come here, because I see no point of Alexander Forbes keeping the money of the poor people, but they've got their records in front of them. And they were saying, Chairperson, in the meeting in Umtata Garden Court, they've got the money of the workers, and they are prepared to pay even the interest. Because I asked, what about the interest? After so long you have been keeping the money of the workers, they said to us, we will pay even the interest. I don't know whether you highlighted that in your notes. Okay. So let's write a letter. Alexander Forbes must come here. Financial Intelligence must come to us in terms of investigation. What about the 18 million at FNB? What is the interest of that money going to? What is the interest of Freight Services and Standard Bank going to? Because there are monies of these different categories at TRTC. I want to second what is said by Timunye and Honorable Kaila. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. I think here, for instance, Honorable, I see Honorable George, it was referred and is back from a reference. Now we're singing the same song because we're not going investigate as a committee. We said, let's refer the case to the investigators. This is a reference. So, I don't know why, because we're not saying that let's handle this thing ourselves. We investigate the relevant department is investigator to come to the committee after the investigation. We can give them the time frame to come back to the committee. So we are not handling it. We are finalizing it because we referred to the committee, to the relevant committee, but they didn't come back. They come back with nothing. And the chairperson write again to the committee to finalize this thing. Because we gave that we referred to that committee, we gave them 6 months doing nothing. So I concur with both of you. If yourself, you said let's refer it, and your colleague said let's refer it, and even Honorable Timunye said refer it, and all of us said let's refer it to the investigators. Is there anyone who's different of that? Thank you, sir. Come.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not differing from you. What you are saying is exactly in line with what I initially suggested. Might I just say that I think all the members on this committee work with poor people, but not all of us drive around in the poor areas with our Land Rovers. So to say that we are, that some members are not here to represent the poor people is quite arrogant and misinformed, and in combination, that is a very dangerous thing to be. But Chairperson, I would concur, and I would restate again that yes, we as a committee do not have the powers to investigate, and that's not what we're going to do. If it gets referred to someone who can finalize the petition and we put a time frame to it just to make sure that they do come back to the committee, I can be in full support of that, because that would actually be to represent and to assist the poor community. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Timunye. I think you're the last speaker. Sorry. Okay. Fine. Oh, can you hang on, Honorable Timunye? Can you come in, Mrs. Honorable Engelberg?
Yes, come on. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, I think you need a coffee. I think you need a coffee.
Oh, yes, next to me. Thank you.
Because you're stumbling over your words today.
Sorry.
Chair, we mustn't forget, I know I spoke about the legality of the case that's already been presented to us, but we mustn't forget that Alexander Forbes promised to provide a detailed status of unclaims before the end of the week. So my recommend, I would like to suggest that we can consider that once we get that letter, that maybe we can try and convene a meeting within the next weeks or 2 weeks. There are a lot of opportunities, I think, where we can look at that, and maybe that can help us inform how we want to go forward, because that letter will state how much is unclaimed, why it has been unclaimed. I mean, they've got to give those reasons. And maybe that will assist us to make our decision. Thank you.
Timonya?
I made this submission earlier when I spoke on this matter, that I'm speaking from a disadvantaged position because I do not have the full background of this matter, because I've joined the committee just 3-4 months ago. I've listened to all the stakeholders that were appeared before us this morning, and I've listened to the members who have background on this matter. And there is a court case, the court judgment that has been made reference to every now and then, and we don't know to what extent that court judgment was executed. And that is a bone of contention from my city. And secondly, from the records, you indicate that this matter was referred to other committees as suggested by Honorable Mitchalakis. And the matter came back to us. And I want, with your permission, please, Chair, the content advisor to speak after I've spoken to make a comment. And sadly, we after listening to all the inputs and the presentations and the comments by members, the court judgment was not executed, and we have pensions of members that are sitting somewhere with a pension administrator, and we don't know what the value of those is now. And the behavior of Alexander Forbes, from where I'm sitting, leaves much to be desired. And it is on that basis, Chair, among other reasons, that I think it is very cardinal of us to begin to say forensic investigation on this matter. But then the biggest question is, who commissions that forensic investigation? Is it this committee? Is it Parliament? Is it the Presidency? And my view is, in this case, the primary office that needs to commission that investigation, that must be ordered to commission that investigation, is the office of the Premier in the Eastern Cape.
Yes. To add what I was saying, I think we need to sit down with the legal advice, but I think the council, chairperson of the council, can instruct the investigation through the committee. Sorry. Thank you very much for that suggestion. I get you.
If you are highlighting this last sentence of yours, of the chairperson of the Council of Provinces, it would be proper to make an appointment with her so that we go there as a committee, as members, and explain why we are requesting this. So that thing, it's an inside practice. It must be done as soon as possible.
Yeah. No. Okay. Let me allow as your proposal, Honourable Timonye, contact advice to just take us some
advice.
Just to provide clarity around the judgment. The judgment was brought to the attention of the committee, as indicated by Honourable Gayla, and Honourable Wana knows also that it was brought to the attention of the committee. The gravamen, the issue, as in the issue in that judgment, was around whether government is obligated to give them jobs. So the issue of the pensions didn't come in full view. And so the issue was around whether pensions were paid or not, because the judge said that it was common cause. But bearing in mind that the action was brought by 500-odd employees, whereas at the time of its liquidation, TRTC had 1,644 employees. So when we received the petitioners were maintaining that, yes, some of us, our colleagues, received their pensions and their benefits, but we didn't receive those pensions and benefits. So the committee then took a decision at that point that it's worth listening to the petitioners. So we didn't want to sort of, we wanted to respect, you know, the principle of separation of powers. It's a court judgment. But the issue in that court judgment was around whether government was obliged to ensure that there are jobs for them post the liquidation. So But what I can't remember clearly was whether, because I was a researcher at the time, whether we sought advice from Parliament's legal unit. So it may be worth getting advice from them around to what extent we can get involved, because the chairperson at the time took the view that here we're not considering whether or not the jobs, it's common cause now that, you know, they have no jobs. They were promised jobs. You know, the idea was that post its liquidation, a new entity would be formed, and then they would be taken on onto this new entity, and that never happened. So he felt that the issue that came before the court then had nothing to do with the severance or, you know, the provident fund payments, etc. So he felt that it was worth, you know, giving an ear to these particular petitioners.
Thank you. Honourable members, are you happy with this?
Mr. Chair, I just want to check something, and I think that's where Dr. Gondwe could maybe assist us. In terms of that court case, I know there were 508 applicants, and the court case said it was common cause that the people were paid. Does that common cause include all the employees of the company, or was it then only those 508? Because maybe we need to just clarify that.
I think that's what we need clarity from yes. Legal Service, that if they say it's common cause, because let me give you an example. I know of instances where a class action, because clearly this was a class action, is brought, but you find that the judgment will pertain to those particular employees that brought the class action. And then you have others that maybe, if a judgment is given, let's say you worked for that entity prior to the judgment, the question becomes, Then the question then begins, what happens to those employees that perhaps were not part of the action, but they worked for the entity and the judgment pertains to them? They would be entitled to claim legally, you know. So I think we need clarity from legal services around those issues, because the petitioners maintain that fair and well, you know, some of our employees, you know, our counterparts received their provident fund. Some were paid, but some of us got nothing at all.
Yes. To take it further, this issue of common cause needs to be quantified, like you correctly said it. See, because this newspaper cutting that Honorable Gera circulated now, Alexander Forbes is on record to be saying that he still has some pensions sitting with them. And whose pensions are those?
Yes.
And what is the value of those pensions that are due to who?
Yes.
We need to really determine and quantify those, and who does that?
Yes.
In forensic investigation?
Yes. In fact, they actually, when they made their submission, they encouraged the petitioners to put in claims to see whether, in fact, they because they said we can't give you the names, because that would be in violation of the POPI Act, which protects personal information. But what we can encourage the petitioners to do is to put in claims with us, and we will pay them, you know, the money is due to them, including the interest that has accrued to date.
Yeah. Are we agreed that those members must submit their claims in the meantime, to Alexander Forbes?
Let's check, let's bounce that with legal services, if it can be done in law.
Good.
What I was going to say, Chairperson, if we say those members must submit their names, they might not get all their money. If you can see that Alexander is not prepared to pay the pension, if you look at the data.
Mm.
So rather let all those go to the forensic audit, whoever is investigating, let it go there so that they get their money from forensic. Alexander Fox failed to pay these people.
Mm.
They could have paid these people if they were. They failed. They got their own agenda why they failed to pay them. But what I also want to say, if we listen to SIU about the liquidators, something that we must not leave out. The liquidators and the monies that are in the bank. So we must also, maybe we can also ask SIU to do further investigation as well, but we've got to think about that. Let's think out of the box. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you. Honourable members.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. No, you're busy. Let's stop it here and then allow the security to take over, and we'll try with the officials. Either we put up a letter to the chairperson of the council saying that the decision of the committee is to instruct another entity
But even those ones can care for it, can do the same thing. So thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned.
Okay.
That's fine. Is it the same letter that you sent it?
Yes.
Did you respond?
You, I sent it to
Chipu,
our chairperson and to our legal.
Did you receive the response?
I haven't read today, no. But no, I didn't.
Did you submit the response?
No, I did respond. So
we did respond.
I did respond.
Last week.
Yes.
By email. Please check your emails now.
Same WhatsApp. Same WhatsApp.